This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Well, welcome to the Underground. Glenna, will you come up here really quick, just for 1 second, just super quick? This isn't like some big surprise where I give her some expensive gift. I don't really have anything. I just wanted to tell my wife, friend of everybody here, how much it's meant to me to be in ministry together. We have literally rolled through ditches together, and it has been absolutely insane. You know, jail, probation, all this stuff. She came along in my life when I thought, for all good reasons and purposes, that it was coming to an end. And it was the greatest beginning I could have ever imagined. And it has been 11 years. She works so hard from Monday all the way through today. I mean, she works so hard to do what we do, to do this and many, many other things. She planted over 100 trees on the property with her own hands here with a shovel. I mean, this is what she does. She just works so hard, and she loves you guys so much. Anyway, I love you, and I wouldn't want to do this without you, and I'm so glad that you came into my life. Thank you. Well, I think right now would just be a perfect time for a mother-in-law joke. I really do. I just got to think of one, because it just seems so perfect. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. All right, act like I just said this, okay? My mother-in-law did move in with us for a time, and it was really interesting, you know? Every now and again, she'd put on her wedding dress, you know? And she wasn't being sentimental or nothing. She was just super far behind in laundry. All right, come on. It was just real emotional there. I wanted to kind of bring it back some way. All right, so last week I was talking a little bit about how we all have this internal beacon when we're born. We're little babies, we're growing up. We have this, and this is subconscious stuff, but we have this beacon, and we are reaching for and longing for and needing an external regulator, something outside of me to help regulate the inside of me. And so I'm longing for that, I'm reaching for it, I'm crying out for that. And so the idea is that I cry and scream, my face turns beet red, right? And then something bigger than me, some loving presence comes, something wiser than me, stronger than me, comes and searches out the need. You know, you're hungry, are you lonely, are you afraid, do you need changed? You know, what do you need? Meets the need. And then I return to a place of joy and comfort, and I calm back down. And as this happens over and over, I begin to learn to self-regulate. I learn to internalize the fact that I am loved, and I am lovable, and that I'm important. Like, this is all these things I internalize. So that switch kind of goes off at some point. If it doesn't happen for us, you know, for whatever reason it is, and we can go over many, many reasons, but for some reason, if that switch doesn't go off, then we go on in life with that switch still on. And we're searching for something outside of ourselves to regulate the inside of ourselves. And this is all subconscious, again, and this is what happens. And so, you know, studies have shown that we'll return to behaviors, events, experiences, people, substances, all these kinds of things to regulate the inside of ourselves, because I don't know how to regulate on my own. And there's this subconscious drive that says, I need something outside of myself to do it for me. And that's why when I discovered using drugs, you know, when I put drugs in my body, I came alive. Like, I knew this is what I was looking for, this is what I needed. My brain just said, yes, this is the thing, you know, that kind of stuff. So to me, I was kind of thinking it would be like if for some reason Sam's Club went through some remodel and they locked their doors for, you know, 3 months and you got locked in there somehow. and you curled up in the back room in the corner and literally just died, like starved to death and died. And you're surrounded by, you know, pallets and pallets of food. And somehow you don't reach out, crack open one of those boxes or bust open, you know, a can of something and begin to internalize all the stuff that's around you. And I really feel that way when you're in a big church on Sunday morning, you're watching everybody leave, and you're just watching the goings on, you wonder how many people are surrounded by the provisions of God. You know, they're right here, and they just can't internalize the good stuff. Like, they just can't seem to reach out and crack that box open and get all that they're surrounded by. Because it's here. We're here. All this stuff's here, you know. It's incredible to see. And so if you are here tonight in any way like that, or you know someone like that, I want you to know that can change. You know, that can change. We can all be healed of that. I definitely relate to it. Do we have an attachment center? Like, do you have that? We all have it. I think a cool example would be if you, like, take your cell phones. They're all off, of course. Just kidding. If you took your cell phones and you just kind of held it to your heart and you imagine all the connections that you've got, like, you know, your Facebook, your emails, you know, all your stuff, you just think about what this thing is to you and does for you. And then, you know, we're going to go and pull this garbage can up. I want you just to go chuck it in the trash, right? Well, a lot of people will be like, whoa, you know, that's the attachment center, like kind of being pulled on. That's what that is. It's like saying, whoa, that's all my connections, right? My heart's attached to that. And that, I think that's a great example to demonstrate we all have one. So I believe it's Dr. Robert Lefevre. He has treatment centers. Does a lot of work with substance abuse and alcoholism and that stuff. And I know this is really broad, but he basically treats addiction in three ways: genetics, trauma, and exposure. And we see that with addiction, and I really think he's onto something there. Obviously, you know, he does use the 12 steps and the spiritual model as a solution, but this is a big deal. Genetics in, you know, I was raised in a home of addiction. My father was, you know, he was using in ways that were before his time, when they didn't even know they could do the stuff he was doing back in the 70s. He was doing it, you know. And so when I grew up, I had it in my DNA. Like, I had it. Like, I felt like the first time I used, I was born to do drugs. Like, this is what I was designed to do. So genetics is a huge deal. Trauma, real big deal to treat that, to deal with that. And then exposure, you know, growing up around all the bongs and drugs and the options you have of using, you know, growing up around pornography, all the stuff, there's this exposure factor of what your options are, how you're going to live life, right? You grow up in a home, parents busy, working a lot, you know, whatever it is, a lot of stress. You start digging around the house, and you end up getting into whatever mom and dad's into, right? You find a big alcohol bottle or dad's porn stash, whatever it is. This is kind of how it happens. Like, you're just using what's available to you, what's going on. If the fridge is just full of food and there's a TV, then you just sit and watch TV and get into those kinds of habits, right? So when it comes to trauma, too, just touching on these things, we got big trauma, big T trauma, we got little T trauma, and these things have to be dealt with. They have to be addressed. Big T trauma, I think we all get. Little T trauma is like death by a thousand cuts, right? All the little stuff that really, really adds up. And more studies are showing the effects of little trauma, how huge it is, such a big deal. And to me, the picture I get is kind of the idea of disease in the body, where my wife and I love to study diet, lifestyle, exercise, all that stuff, just to see how to be healthy. The idea of disease, not all of it, but obviously a lot of it, the idea of toxicity and deficiency. You know, we ask our bodies to deal with an awful lot of stuff. The toxicity of what we put in creates the atmosphere of disease, and then deficiency, what we don't give it that it desperately needs. Those two together, that's the deadly combo of what creates a lot of disease. And so we like to study that. It's very, very similar to our lives in the soul. Toxicity, deficiency, you know, there it is, right? Big T trauma, little T trauma. This stuff accumulates. All right, a little example, right? Doesn't seem like a big deal, but check it out. You know, we grew up in a home where there was a lot of demonic activity, a lot of dark sorcery, weird, bizarre stuff. And my dad used a lot of needles, and there was a lot of weird influences that would come in to our home through it. And he would sit at night, freaked out, up days and days and days, and he'd start painting very strange pictures and opening doors to whatever world, you know. And I remember laying there in my bed and feeling when these things would happen, like, you know, we just hit another level. Like, Dad just leveled up, you know what I mean? Like, whoa, you know, now what's going to happen, right? You know, we all going to start levitating around or what? But it was a bizarre thing, but we all knew, we didn't say it, but we all knew in the house, all that weird activity was connected to whatever he was doing as the head of our home, as the high priest of our home, as the father of our home. It was all connected to what was going on in that bedroom. We all knew it. No one taught me that. No one sat down and explained it to me, showed me a diagram, but we knew it. I knew it. And you couldn't tell me otherwise. So we were affected huge. So this is the stuff I'm growing up around, right? So I'm all stressed out. And I remember some reason I went with my mom to Atlanta, 20-minute drive from our house, just to go pick my dad up from the nightclub where he worked. And we went and picked him up. And my dad's just all 70s, bell bottoms, you know. He's got jade stuff on, maybe a mood ring. He's all messed up. Like, he's just a cool cat. He's feeling no pain. He's high as a kite. He jumps in our big Cadillac, and we head home, and we're swerving, right? He's flying. I mean, hammer down, whoa, right? Whatever the name of the road is. And we're flying, and he is swerving like nobody's business. And every time we would just about hit that concrete median at high speed, my mom, who's here tonight, would let out a scream, bloody murder, right? And I'm sitting there like, you know, I've got an ulcer eats through my stomach, through my seat, through the bottom of the car, through the road. I mean, I'm stressed out so bad, right? And then this is the whole way home. He's going this way. He's about to hit this big concrete thing, and here comes the scream. And I'm just sitting there being terrified. That's when I lost all my hair, guys. That's when it happened. Yeah. So I'm saying this to say, when we got home, I had a breakdown. Like, I broke. Like, something broke in me. I can't even tell you what. I can't even tell you how. But when I got out of that car, I was broken. Okay? Now, a lot of kids, a lot of people could go through something like that. They'd be all right. I mean, they'd be all shook up. They might be freaked out. But it wouldn't break them. So what I'm saying is little T trauma, all the little cuts, all little nicks, all little jabs, not getting a good breakfast, not getting any sleep, freaking out, being afraid, seeing all the needles, all the demonic stuff. Like, this is all stacking up on little boy. And then you put one big weight on them that normally we could kind of carry something. And there's just no possible way. I broke. And so my wife pays the price. My daughter pays the price of this. The echoes of this stuff, you know, when we're riding in a car. Don't take me anywhere in a car. You know, just don't do it, right? I mean, I'm not way out of control, but I'm just saying, okay? It's there. So what I'm saying is when the external pressure is greater than the internal pressure, the internal structure, something's going to give, something's going to break. And on that night, this little boy broke. Bam, right? Something broke. Okay, that's a great example, I think. So I am interested in, guys, I am very interested in, I'm kind of trekking through Israel's journey. So what I am interested in doing what we do is how God heals people. What does God do with that? How does he heal people? And I'm really, really interested in that. Think about the children of Israel. Did they have genetics? They were slaves for 400 years. They had genetics, DNA of slavery. Did they have trauma? Oh, they had trauma. The Bible says that they cried out with a great cry to God for him to rescue. Like their cry. It's the same words in that cry as when Cain slayed Abel, right? His blood cried. Same word. Like that kind of cry to God to save them, right? This is what we're talking about. They had trauma and they had exposure. What options did they have? How do I live? Where are my tools, right? So think about this, guys. This is so cool to me. We have an example right in front of us, right here, and I just get so excited thinking about it. God himself wanted to take these over 2 million people. He wanted to take them from the very bottom of society and bring them to the very top. That's pretty awesome. He wanted to take them from slave mentality, slave thinking, all these belief systems, all this brokenness, and he wanted to take them to seeing themselves as the royal sons and daughters of God walking on this earth. He wanted to take them from people that were super immature, complained at everything, right? Wanted the easy way out, very immature, not trained, not tested, you know, all that. And he wanted to take them to become people that carried wisdom from heaven. Like they would be a resource for the world. This is what God wanted to do with the children of Israel. I am mind blown. Is that appealing to you guys? Like, that's super appealing to me. If God looks at me, says, boy, I want to take you from where you're at, and I know how to do it. I got a way to do it. I want to know how he does it. I really do. It reminds me of when we were at North Star sometime. Now, I don't remember when it was, but I said to these guys in North Star and gals, if I were to take a whole thing of envelopes, and they were, each envelope had $5,000 in it, and just handed it out. Everybody gets one. $5,000 cash. And then we opened the door and said, you're free to go. How many of you know in your heart you'd be right back here in like 2 days? How many of you know? And they were honest about it. Like, does that mean we get the $5,000? Like, you know. And I'm like, then you're not free. You're not free. You can't even be blessed with $5,000. You're gonna go put yourself in jail over that, like over that. And the crazy thing is I couldn't even be blessed with $20. I was breaking into vending machines, and I wasn't even doing that. I wasn't even as noble as that. I was standing guard while my buddy did it. Like, that's the kind of stuff we were doing, you know, diving over fences and running up to these places and busting into these vending machines and coming up to these dealers with this giant roll of ones, you know, and they're like, you know, what is this you're doing here, you know? I couldn't be blessed. I couldn't be blessed. God couldn't bless me. He couldn't bless me with anything. He couldn't bless me with anything. How sad is that? I can't even be a blessed man. God help me. God train me. God, do something in here that I may be a blessed man, that I won't turn everything you give me into shame, into something that's a transgression against my community and my family. Please help me. Do something for me. All right. The first thing God does with the children of Israel is he changes their status. Super cool. Think about it. Okay, we have a guy that lives in our neighborhood, and he's got a dog, and his dog obeys every command, right? He goes when he says go, sits when he says sits. He's perfect. But that same man has a little son, that slobbers all over the place, breaks things, takes dumps in his diaper, keeps him up all night, which one of them is going to inherit everything the father owns? Right? The son. The son. So the first thing is, it's not about behavior. It's about birth, who you belong to. And the first thing God does to heal these people is he gives them identity. You're mine. First of all, you're mine. You belong to me. And I want you to know, it's one of the realest things I've ever experienced, is that God took this little Japanese American boy, little terrified little kid, out of that house in Atlanta, Georgia, and adopted me into his family, said, "You're my boy now. Now learn my way. Now learn my way." That's the first thing he did. I was born a slave, guys. I was born a slave, and I am no longer a slave. I think the order is believe, belong, and behave. I think that's the order. I think that's the order. The scripture says that those who believe in him, those who receive him, he gives the right to become the sons of God. I'll never get over that. What are we going to inherit as the sons and daughters of God, guys? What are we going to inherit? Just think about for a minute. What were Adam and Eve walking in? What were they going to inherit? Get kind of an idea what we're going to inherit. Was the earth Adam and Eve's? Obviously. So it's ours. Not this one, the one to come. The good one, like the new one, right? Fresh out of the package. How about heaven? Was heaven theirs? Absolutely. God had huge plans for Adam and Eve. When heaven and earth were joined, for them to come together, it's all theirs, it's ours, it's yours. The right to eat at the tree of life forever, that's probably a lot better than the salad I ate today that gave me a stomachache. How about eternal life? That was theirs, right? It's ours. It's ours to inherit. That's just a tiny little scratch of the surface. Okay, so if God wanted to take these people and bring them to such a high level, bring them to such a high place, and possess greatness, and bring them to this place, why didn't he just give them Egypt? You ever think about that? Like, the land was awesome, running water, everything's there. Why not just kind of dissolve the Egyptians and let them have it? There you go. It's over. It's done. He didn't do that. Because there's something about the journey. There's something about this journey that is so important for our survival, for us to be able to handle a blessing for him to give us, like the $5,000, right? Did you guys know that most animals born in captivity die when they're released in the wild? Most of them. It's super interesting. If I had a bear, right? Imagine me having a bear in a little cage. And the cage gets bigger, of course, right? And pretty soon he's this giant 800-pound, I don't know how much a bear weighs. Imagine he's a grown bear, right? And then I feel real guilty because I'm looking at him. And so I take him out in the middle of nowhere, out in the middle of Alaska wilderness, and go, "You're free," right? Yay! Is that yay for the bear? Boo. Boo. What's boo about it? What he knows about living life, none of it applies. Right? And what he doesn't know about living life, all those things will kill him. They will kill him, kill him. I was listening to a guy talk about surfing as his trauma healing. Guys, if you deal with trauma, do something physical, connected to it. Like the water over his face, the swimming, facing the waves. I mean, this guy wrote this beautiful book, and he talked about Only 2% of the time he's out there surfing as therapy. Only 2% of the time he's actually on the wave enjoying the moment. All the rest of the time is a struggle. Getting hit with the waves, trying to get out there, navigating for position. And he said, so is trauma work. Trauma work is so hard, so painful, so difficult. But man, when you get up on that wave, it's worth it, and it is worth it. The children of Israel were born in a mighty birth through the Red Sea. Boom. I mean, it must have been incredible to see. We watched Tony's baptism out here in the lake. That was very moving. That was powerful, Tony. I mean, she went down in that water, the old Tony. That old Tony's gone forever. She came up a brand new creation, a brand new person, ready to rock, right? Yes. All things are new, right? So the children of Israel were born through the walls of water out the other side. All right, let me show you this. It says Exodus 20, says, I am the Lord your God. This is him talking to the children of Israel. I'm the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery. Wow. What about us? We're new covenant people. We're now, right? All right, we'll check out this over here in Galatians. He says, this is us. Now you are no longer a slave, but God's own child. And since you are his child, God has made you his heir. Sounds like the same God, doesn't it? Sounds pretty familiar. Sounds pretty exciting. Okay, so here we see now next, Israel gets in a fight. They get attacked. Super interesting. Not going to go way into this, but they get in a fight. Now what, right? He teaches them, they run out of water. He says, I'm your water. They run out of food. They don't have food. He says, I'm your food. Now fight. Okay, now we're rolling our sleeves up time. Pretty exciting. This fight seems to really, really make God upset at the Amalekites. He gets super upset about this and makes all these statements about obliterating these people, like pounding them into the ground forever type thing. You're like, whoa. But you get more information in Deuteronomy 25 about this particular attack, why it upset him so much. Because you imagine 2 million people marching like through the desert, and it says the Amalekite warriors attacked them from the back. So who's in the back? You know, if there was 2 million people walking and we're marching along, who's at the very end? Who? The older ones? The children? The weak? This is what these warriors did. They came around the back. And God said, you know what? Now you've really made a bad move. This is what upset him so much. And I don't know about you, but I see in my past, my history, my family, many of the people that we work with, that we love, it's like, man, he loves us. Man, he loves us. I have been broken in so many ways inside, and I know it. I have been broken so bad that over and over, this community, society says, I need to be locked up, that I can't get it together. God loves me. He loves the fact that I'm trailing at the very end. And then I'm broken. He loves the broken. And the one thing the Amalekites did not calculate in their big attack is the presence of God was on these people. I want you to know, if you are being attacked tonight, the one thing the enemy is not calculating is the presence of God in your life. Let me show you this one thing. Let me just read this little piece to you guys, okay? It says, while the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Moses commanded Joshua, choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek.
for us tomorrow, I will stand at the top of the hill, holding the staff of God in my hand. So Joshua did what Moses commanded and fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of a nearby hill. And as long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage. Whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Moses' arms soon became so tired, he could no longer hold them up. So Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. Then they stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands, so his hands held steady until sunset. And as a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. God told him to write this down, that this had happened. This lesson's super clear, really basic. I mean, there's a lot there, obviously. Arms up, winning. Arms down, not winning. Winning, losing. Winning, losing. Depending on God, winning. Not depending on God, losing. With God, through me, through us, winning. On my own, in my own understanding, losing, winning, losing. Like, it was really, really a clear lesson. And then remember, this is awesome. Now, again, I won't go over this because most of us know this David and Goliath thing, but remember the Philistines said, I got an idea. Our champion versus your champion, and then the winner will win and rule the day. Like, then you'll be our slaves, or we'll be yours, right? Champion versus champion. See, the problem with Israel is they didn't have a 9-foot giant guy as a champion. Problem. David hears this. Okay, he's thinking, your champion versus our champion, no problem. Who was David's champion? Right? He's like, bring it on. I love it. Arms up, winning. Down, losing. He got it. Now, I tell that story, we say that story, we love it. It's really encouraging. This with God, winning, not with God, losing. You know, how often do you feel separate from God? How often do you feel alone? And I'm not talking about big T trauma. I'm even talking about little T trauma. Those are the ones. Is he with you? We went over to Hawaii. This is a little bit embarrassing, but we went over to Hawaii. And I don't know what it is. I want my wife to think I'm like this tough guy. Because she grew up here in Alaska, and her brothers are all these beasts, and they build, you know, huge things, and they do dirt work. You know, all the stuff they drive is huge, and, you know, they're just these big guys that can do anything, you know. And I'm working at Fred Meyer, like, forever. I built these buildings, killed a moose, slayed a bear, and then she looks at me, and I'm like, Fruit Loops are on sale. You know, or, huh. Not real impressive. So the whole time we're on our way, there's this cliff thing up there. It's like a 40-foot cliff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'd just jump off that thing. No problem. I'm from South Florida. I like to jump from really high places, you know. She's like, you wouldn't be afraid? I'm like, no way. Bring it on. I can't wait to get there. Are we there yet? You know, am I jumping yet? And, I mean, I was just talking it up. And I do that with her. And then we get there, right? Oh, man. We climb up this thing, and my talking's getting a little quieter, you know. And we're climbing up this cliff thing and this big rock, and we get up there. And it's not super high, you know. Some of you guys would be like, that's nothing. But, you know, it seemed higher when you got up there. But we get up there, and we walk right up, and on the very edge where you jump, there's this girl clinging to the rock, and she's like, oh, like she's terrified, right? She embodies like what I'm feeling inside. And apparently her husband or boyfriend's like already down in the water with a GoPro, and he's treading water and he's getting mad. He's like, come on, I'm down here, jump, for crying out loud. And she's all just super terrified. And I'm standing there looking at this, you know. And then Glenda's like, well, you're going to jump, right? Oh, yeah, yeah, no problem. As soon as this, you know, works itself out. And I'm looking, and I'm like, man, it looked high. I'm starting to get scared. Like, just flat out, I'm getting scared. And see, the thing is, when the external pressure is greater than the internal pressure, right, you start collapsing. And it was so interesting to see, right by the time it got really awkward, where she was going to say, you're not going to jump, are you? Like, it was coming. Like, any moment, she was going to call me out, right? And so I knew I better do something, right? And so right about then, when I was starting to look dumb in front of my wife, which is forbidden, by the way, that's forbidden, this father and son come bolting up the rocks, and you can just hear their laughter, peals of joy, you know. And this little boy must have been 9 years old. They come running up there, and his dad's just this big, handsome, strong guy, and they have, like, the same haircut, you know, whatever it is, a little tough haircut. The dad's, like, really wearing it like a warrior, and the little baby warrior dude, you know. And they literally run up to the edge of the rock, look at each other, and they go, 1, 2, 3, and they just make this super funny face to each other, and they jump, you know. I did run up to the edge at some point and did this super wimpy jump. I jumped as low as I could, you know. Like, I didn't leap with joy. I did this real, you know, weak, you know, I was trying to get in the water before I even jumped type thing. But I didn't enjoy it at all. And when I got in the water, I was like, man, Stan, why does this have to be your memory of something so awesome, you know? But you think about the father and son. It was so beautiful. And I kept thinking about it. You know, that boy and that father came running up there. And that dad was looking at that son. And that son was looking at that dad. And it was so powerful. The boy was looking at the dad and he was saying, I'm a mini you. I am going to be you. And you are fearless. And so am I. And that father was looking at the son, and he was saying, you're a little me. You're going to be me one day, and I am fearless. And there was this bond. There was this identification that was so powerful. That little boy was receiving, as a great gift, fearlessness in the presence of his father. And I stood up there on that rock in my default position, alone and afraid. A very familiar feeling. I realize I have work to do. We walk in faith for some big things. We see God move in powerful ways. But I realize I have a default position. You put me in the wrong situation, and I will believe I'm alone. That's not the gospel. Win, lose. Win, lose. You know, God would say to me, Stan, why is your heart losing, dude? Right? So, the formula in Scripture, if you want to say that, would be leave, cleave, and become one. He calls us out to the greatest intimacy we could ever imagine. Like, I want you to leave. What does he want you to leave? You know? Cleave. Come on. Now we're one. Me and you. We are greatness. God will fix us. The way God will fix the world, he fixes things by connecting them to himself. Pretty cool stuff. So much of our breakdown, I think, in our culture and now is a breakdown of good relationships. People that understand this stuff. a real breakdown. Why do you think the gay community is so bold in coming out? It's because of support. They have family. They have people around them that love them, that are like them, that say, we are in this together. And there's a boldness that comes from being joined and being understood. And there's an empowerment that happens when we're together. So God taught them, I say all this to kind of get to this point here. God taught them that he was their water, he was their food, he was their protection. And then he led them, I mean, read through it. He led them to live a life centered around God. How they physically lived, how they lived in every single way. And think about this, guys. Just think about this. These are over 2 million traumatized slaves, broken down at the very bottom of society. How are you going to heal them? How would we heal them? God shows us how it's done. This is what his plan was. He developed in them a lifestyle that the first belongs to God. Everything, he's first. He's first. The tithe was never about 10%. It was about the first 10% was his. He's first. First 15 minutes of the day, first of the week, first of the month, first of the year, first of everything. He's first. He's number one. Someone told me the other day, I can't quit smoking. It's the first thing I do. Like the power of first. He's first. This was for them, guys. He trained in them so deeply in such an intense way, pulled them out in the middle of nowhere, out in the middle of the desert, and then train them into a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, winter, spring, summer, fall life centered around we're the people of God. Festivals, ceremonies, rituals, feasts, all of it pointing to one thing. We're the children of the Most High God. All of it. We're talking saturation. Remember what I did today. Write it down. What is he doing? You have a new history. You have a brand new history, right? Since you came out of the water, Tony, how many miracles? You know, what are you praying for? You're writing them down. You're getting a new history, right? A new history, a new present, a new future. We're talking about, guys, if we want to heal, I want to heal. I want it all. We're talking about full immersion into a sea of health. A sea of health. We sit with so many people and we beg them on bended knee to do what we call take massive action. Take massive action. Immerse yourself completely. You're the children of God. What would that look like, right? As we obey him this way, our relationship with basic laws change, right? I mean, I hope they change. Has your relationship with your parents' laws changed? Right, like brush your teeth. The reason I brush my teeth, guys, is, well, mom and dad say I'm gonna get in trouble at night, so I gotta brush my teeth, right? But as you get older, you realize, brush the ones you want to keep, type thing. I just got a picture. I don't look both ways because dad's going to get me in trouble. I don't eat my dinner so I can get dessert, right? Everything changes. So my relationship with the law as I become a son changes into the wisdom of God. And as the internal pressure and the structure he develops in every moment of my day, he's building something great. Then the external pressure doesn't break me the way it used to. Is that awesome? Is that awesome? So I'll close out with this one thought. Well, first of all, do you have a plan around what you want to change? What would it be like to just come out and take massive action and just marinate in health, marinate in the love of God, marinate in his perspective on everything? Now, this is my final point. Jesus said that he would send another advocate, another just like himself. In other words, if my wife was eating a vanilla ice cream cone and she said, get me another, I wouldn't go get her a chocolate sundae, right? The words he uses when he says another means exactly like the same, like exactly like him, exactly like him. He said, I'm going to send another just exactly like me, and he will live in you, right? So my point is this, and I'm just touching on this for where we're going. What would it be like to discover that Jesus has a twin, and you're that twin? What would that be like? To get your mind around that one. I want to walk as a son of God, filled with his spirit. I want to heal from my traumas. I want to have a plan that honors God. I want my morning, my noon, my evening, my day, my week, my month, my year, every single season of the year, my history, my present, my future, to reflect the gospel, the good news, the greatest news I've ever heard in my life. He's made me a son. I'm his son. I'm his son. So I'll go ahead and pray. Father, thank you for the good news. I feel your love, and I thank you for it. Train us in healing. Train us to walk as yours. And when we jump off these silly cliffs, may we know in our hearts, in everything we do, we are not alone. And whatever's hurting us tonight, whatever's eating at us tonight, we're not alone. Hands up, we win. Hands down, we lose. Tonight, we win. Tonight, we win. In Jesus' name, amen.